Page 112 of The Unfolding is stories about angels.
This thing happened about 25 years ago. I don't think I'll ever lose the thought that he was an angel and not just a human. God orchestrates a lot more in our lives, I think, than we're aware.
Matthew 24:31. And he will send out angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other.
God's story has been unfolding.
Since the beginning of time.
He invites you to be a part of it.
Another page in the unfolding.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. When you read the Christmas story, you hear a lot about angels. Gabriel appearing to Mary, Joseph in a dream, and of course, the angels that filled the sky above the shepherds the night Jesus was born. Those are some of the most well-known stories, but there are so many more. Angels have witnessed God's unfolding story since the very beginning. Yes, they were at Jesus' birth, but they also tended to Jesus when he faced Satan in the desert. An angel gave Jesus strength in the Garden of Gethsemane. It was an angel that rolled back the stone at Jesus' tomb and said to the women, "Do not be afraid. He's not here. He is risen, just as he said." God uses them all throughout his unfolding story, not as something we would worship, but as heavenly messengers, or sometimes to protect people from danger. The presence of angels, something so heavenly, gives us a glimpse into how big and beyond our imagination God's unfolding story really is. For the third Christmas in a row, we ask you to share your stories. Have you ever had an experience that you believe was an angelic encounter? We collected so many stories that this year we have a two-part episode. If you missed last week, be sure to go back and listen to page 111. Now, here's part two of the 2021 edition of Stories About Angels.
This thing happened about 25 years ago. And unless I get Alzheimer's or something that erases it actually from my mind, I don't think I'll ever lose the thought that he was an angel. You know, God does the blessing and he just uses angels as a tool. It was the four of us traveling home in our little compact car, and we were in Northern Illinois. So we were coming like out of the city. We were in the suburbs towards home. We live west. About by 45 minutes or so. We were about 15 minutes from home, but the interstate leads to within about 15 minutes of our home before it heads west to DeKalb. So we were on this remote kind of rural part. It was dark. It was in the evening. We'd left my brother's house, and it was raining. And all of a sudden, our car stopped. And it was just the four of us. Our son was about 8. Our daughter was about 12. So it was just the four of us in the car. We were on this rural part of this interstate, and the car stopped. And up ahead was an overpass. So the car kind of just coasted. So it gave my husband a chance to get out and look under the hood. My husband worked in a business where he had a company vehicle, and they also had a full shop. He suspected it was the starter right off the bat. And so he got out of the car. And of course, I'm nervous because as a driver, I know when you're by an interstate or a high-speed highway, this isn't just off the side of the road. Cars are zipping by at 65 miles an hour, and the rain made it so it was lower visibility. So the kids and I were in the car, and I suggested that it was time that we prayed. So I said, first, we need to pray for the safety for Dad, because he's out there, you know, in this vulnerable spot, rainy, dark thing, looking under the hood and everything. Then my son spoke up. I was thinking about this, and it was my son that spoke up. And our son said, let's pray for somebody to stop. You know, like to stop and save us. And I thought, you know, what does that look like? You know, there's a family of four. You know, somebody can pull over. But, you know, we didn't even have cell phones at that time. We didn't as a family. So we did. That's what the three of us sat in there and prayed. And I don't think it was 2 to 3 minutes. And a tow truck comes around us, you know, and pulls right in front of us. And right then, I knew we had an immediate answer to prayer. That was the first thing that I knew, But there it just kind of got more interesting because he pulled and then he pulled and he got out, but we couldn't really see. But he was out there for a couple minutes, obviously talking to my husband and about what might be wrong or whatever. And before I knew it, they had kind of finished talking and we were all kind of herded into this tow truck and made our way to a town that was further west than our home by about 10 minutes. So we were 15 minutes from home, about 25 minutes from where my husband apparently wanted to have the car towed. And that was for the express purpose of working on it. And then we would hop in a company vehicle and head home. So we traveled that 25 minutes or so to the shop with the tow truck driver. And I remember sitting there, the kids were chattering away, asking him questions. And I just remember this feeling that it was more than this immediate answer to prayer. It's like, where did he come from? How, you know, God knew we were there. God heard our prayer. But I felt that this guy was kind of otherworldly. And it sounds kind of strange. I had already become a committed follower of Christ by that time. And I just had the feeling he was an angel. And I remember before we made it to the shop, I spoke to him and asked him about his faith. And I said, you have to understand this. We had just started praying and you came. So I said, if nothing else, you were an answer to our prayer. And, you know, this guy was just a regular guy. He had candy wrappers and stuff in his truck. So I didn't think a whole lot, but I was convinced that he was just kind of otherworldly. So we got to the shop and we got out at the details. I don't remember all that stuff, but we start driving home. That's when Fred, my husband, filled us in on their conversation. And he said, you know, when he pulled up, you know, they determine what's going on, you know, and where do you want to go? Where do you want me to tow you? And he said, I told him where we wanted to go, the town we wanted to go. And the guy says, well, that's where I have my business. Well, on the way home, I didn't know that until on our way home in the company vehicle. But one thing my husband noted is that the town is farther west. It's really in farm territory. And these towns are spread out far apart and they're small. They have a gas station, a bank, a little library or whatever, but they're not big. And my husband had already worked for this company for almost 20 years at the time, about between 15 years or so. And he says, I have never seen a tow truck business in this town, never. And so for the couple years following this, sometimes Fred would come home and say, you know, I still haven't ever seen that tow truck again. And never. He said one time he came home and he said, I thought I spotted him in this small town, but there was no tow truck business. And that's where the guy said his business was. And it was really, you know, it was 25 minutes away. And he had come from the city. I remember him saying he had worked all day in Chicago. Hmm. So we never saw him again. The fact that his business was supposed to be in that town and in a small town, you didn't see it. It just seemed too weird to me. So to me, that was our angel sighting. And in addition to that, that was God's answer to prayer for us at that time because we were truly stranded. So anyway, that was it. Nothing real spectacular, mm-hmm. Nothing, you know, mind blowing, didn't save a life or anything like that. But after 25 years, I'm in my 60s now, and I still think about it and I can still go under that overpass. I can still think I'm right back in that car praying and riding in that tow truck. So it still puts tears in my eyes. That was such a quick answer to prayer.
I have one more question for you because I thought I'm very curious about this phrase that you said. There was something about him that seemed otherworldly. Can you put your finger on anything? Like, what was it about him that felt that way? Was it just the circumstance or?
It might have been, I think, probably the circumstance. But I also, at that point, I would have been, say, maybe 5-6 years or so, you know, into walking with the Lord Jesus. And I'm not going to come out and say, are you really an angel or are you a real person? I mean, what kind of question would that be? Because I looked around his cab and he had gum wrappers and candy wrappers. You know, he was just a regular guy. He wore gloves. You know, he had skin. He had a coat on, you know, So he's not going to say, yes, ma'am, I am an angel in answer to Hebrews chapter 13. I am. What is somebody going to say to that? But I think it was just either the circumstance and just, I don't know, when I was talking to him, besides my kids chattering away, I was looking for clues. I wasn't just happy that a tow truck driver stopped and picked us up. I suspected something from the get-go. It just seemed that way. It just seemed weird. So it's probably more related to the circumstances, mm-hmm. but I will believe to the end of my days that he was an angel and not just a human mm-hmm. that happened to be, because I don't believe in those kinds of circumstances. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in coincidences. Oh, what a coincidence. You happen to be driving on your route home today. That's not me. That God orchestrates a lot more in our lives, I think, than we're aware. But I think encounters with angels, and I don't know how common or how rare that is, but to me, it's just the hand of God. And it's his hand that directs all that, and we don't understand it. And I've given up trying, Meredith. I don't try to overthink and understand stuff that's not mine to understand. But someday, I'll know for sure.
Luke 4:10, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you to guard you.
It was Christmas Eve, 1985, and our family stopped at my parents' house on the way to our church's evening service. My parents' neighborhood always got together on Christmas Eve and did what's called a luminaria, where they would put candles in a white bag and fill the bag, partway with sand so they were stable. And you would drive through the neighborhood and these white glowing bags were lining the street. And I guess the tradition is way back, just the way people put candles in their windows now, lighting the way for the Christ child. And so on our way to church, we wanted to stop and say hi to my parents and drive through the neighborhood. Well, after we visited with my parents for a bit, we came outside and discovered that snow had covered the roads. Well, at that time, we lived in Western Pennsylvania, which is pretty hilly, a suburb of Pittsburgh. So that was not uncommon. And I buckled our two sons, who were a kindergartner and a toddler at the time, into their car seats while my husband brushed off the car. And so we made our way carefully out of my parents' neighborhood, hoping that the highway leading to church would be salted and we could get there on time. Well, as we headed down a steep hill, which connected to one of the main roads, our car hit a sheet of ice and we began to slide. And I was afraid that we wouldn't be able to stop before we got to the busy intersection. And I just kind of cried out, Jesus, please help us stop before we get to Lincoln Way. And by God's grace, my husband was able to maneuver the car so that the front right tire grabbed onto some of the gravel on the side of the road. And so he then tapped the brakes while we stopped, but the car turned sideways, kind of slid, and was perpendicular across the road, but we had stopped. And so we were thankful for that. We kind of thank you, Lord. Well, I guess I forgot to pray about any cars behind us, because all of a sudden there were headlights growing larger in the passenger windows. And I kind of leaned to the left, and in my brain, I remember thinking, I need to tell our son who was in the back on that passenger side to lean away, but you can't process and get it out fast enough. I knew we were about to be T-boned. First, there was the crunch of metal, and then a second later, the shattering of glass. And our car was pushed further, but thankfully, we didn't get pushed into that main thoroughfare. So I unbuckled my seatbelt to turn around and check on the kids. And I couldn't open the door because it was all smashed in. Well, when I turned around, I was horrified to see the right side of our six-year-old face covered in blood. And it had especially pulled around his eyes. And that shattering of glass that we heard was the back passenger window that had shattered, and there was glass all over the back seat. And my first thought was, oh no, he's got glass in his eyes. And so I kind of yelled, "Don't touch your eyes." And through his, you know, crying, he said, "Why not?" And I said, "Because you have glass in your eye." He said, "No, I don't have any." So I wasn't sure if he didn't realize it because of the shock or the blood or what. But by this time, several people in the neighborhood came outside to help and told us that they had called 911 to report the accident. So we were able to crawl out of the driver's side and get the two boys out of the back seat, out of their car seats. And our other son, who was a toddler, was totally unaffected. He was crying, but I don't think he really realized what had happened. Well, a very kind lady and gentleman invited us to come into their home, but it was right by there, and gave us some towels to mop up the blood, and found out that the gash on my son's forehead was not nearly as bad as I thought it was, but you know how facial wounds just bleed. So we were mopping that up, and we heard a knock at the door, and there was a lady there, and she said, "Hi, I'm Molly from Kentucky. I was driving by when I heard the 911 call on the radio, and I'm an ENT. Can I help?" And we nodded and at the homeowner, and so Molly came in. I remember that, I don't remember her face, but I remember that Molly was kind of tall and that she had brown curly hair. And as she entered, my husband and I were just enveloped in this sense of peace. It was just as if we knew everything was going to be fine. And our sons, who had been crying, also calmed and settled. And Molly opened her supply kit. I remember being amazed that she had so many things in there. And she put pressure on our son's wound, which stopped bleeding almost immediately, and applied a gauze bandage. Well, we were thanking her just as the local EMTs came into the house, and we started answering their questions, and I never saw Molly leave. Because it was determined that our son's head, when the car had hit, he kind of like went left towards the center of the car, and then the force caused his head to ricochet back and shatter that back passenger window. The EMTs wanted to take him to the ER to check for a concussion, which thankfully he did not have. So several hours later, after we got home and everything was settled, our son was in bed. I called my sister to let her know what had happened. And my sister and brother-in-law were listening, and my brother-in-law said, "I think Molly was an angel." And that was the first time that that had occurred to me, because of all of the nerves, I guess, after everything had happened. You're just so concerned and want to make sure your kids are okay. Well, we hadn't recognized it, but when we thought about it, we looked back and thought, what EMT from Kentucky would have their radio tuned to a channel dedicated to the local rescue units? And what were the chances that Molly would arrive and have our son calmed and bandaged before the local EMTs arrived? I remember my jaw kind of dropping and the light dawning, and it was, now it makes sense. Well, only the Lord's presence could explain the peace that accompanied the angel who ministered to our son and our family that Christmas Eve.
We've got three more angel stories coming up, including one about a red-headed angel in the Dallas airport. You won't want to miss it. But first, a word from our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H-Squared Leadership Institute. Habib, you seem to me to be a naturally happy person, but I've heard you say that's not your natural disposition. How do you explain that?
I'm a regular human being. I mean, many people appear a certain way to you. It took a lot of work and training. So, you know, you've heard me talk about out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. That means I'm spewing out what's really in my heart. You know, we get frustrated, we get angry about what's happening around us, we want things to be better. So if we dwell on that, it shows up in our conversation. But if we dwell on different things, what comes out of our mouth is better. That's why I appear to be happy, because I work on what's inside my heart. 1 Timothy 4, Paul is encouraging Timothy, do something good. And he says, have nothing to do with godless myths, but train yourself to be godly. You know, we go to the gym to train ourselves. we go to tennis and train and get our tennis game better or our football game better, etc., we can train ourselves to have better thoughts and have better actions. That's why I say, I'm not naturally like that, but I work at it. And I think a lot of people work at it too, not just me. I encourage people to work at their behavior, not just their sports and at their weight, you know. Mm-hmm. At HabibHabib.com, I have motivational minutes and inspirational minutes and talk a lot about these things. And it's just dwelling on the good in the world. There's still a lot of good in the world and it can make us happier.
And now a few more stories of angels.
I was probably around the age of six. So my mom always loved to do these fun little activities with me and my siblings. And one of these things was have a movie night. And it always seemed about, I think it was like once a month, we would just get together and we'd build these pillow forts and we just really make it a really fun night. And my mom would make snacks and it was just like a night that we really look forward to. And I just remember that night so clearly when my mom, who said, "Tony, you can't be a part of movie night unless you bring up your clothes and put them in your hamper." And as a little kid, I kind of dreaded that, not just because I wasn't lazy or anything, but I was really, really afraid of the dark. And when I had to throw my clothes in the hamper, that meant I had to go upstairs and kind of run through the dark. I headed up the stairs and the funny thing is my head was down the entire time. I had my head down. I mapped out the house. So I'm fairly certain I had my eyes closed too. So I was walking kind of blind going up these stairs. And my dad, back then he worked super early and he would get to bed pretty early. And so I knew he was up there. He was sleeping. But I was just horrified of the dark. It really freaked me out. As I'm approaching the stairs, one thing to just keep in mind, kind of give you the layout of the house, my room was right next to my parents' room. And so as I'm heading up the stairs, I approach the dark hallway. And all of a sudden, a bright light had appeared in front of me. It was just a surreal experience. And in front of me, I opened my eyes and there was a figure and an outline of what I could only assume was an angel. It was so, so incredibly bright. But the weird thing is I could see an outline. And what I saw was just this long robe. And I will tell you this, this angel was tall, like up to the ceiling tall. I would probably maybe say maybe 7 feet maybe. But as a kid, it probably seemed even taller. And it was just wearing a long robe. A long white robe and a sash coming down to the side. And this angel had its hands out with its palms facing me and it spoke to me. And when it spoke, here's the weird thing. It didn't have a female or a male voice. It was a kind of a weird combination of the two. And when it spoke, I just felt immense peace and warmth. And it almost felt like, when I was in that light and when I was being spoken to, it was almost like all the coldness, all the weight of the world, even that at that young age, just kind of washed away. It was seriously the most surreal feeling in the world. And I just, like I said, I felt immense peace. And this angel told me, "Tony, go get your mom." And as a little kid, this was shocking for one. And, you know, you read these stories in the Bible and you hear about all these people kind of getting a little bit scared by the angel. And I don't know if I was necessarily scared. I was more shocked than anything. And I stood frozen. And as soon as I blinked, like a microsecond, it was gone. And as it vanished, I heard a faint, familiar voice crying out in agony, and it was actually my dad. He was in his bed, and I kind of creeped over because I was obviously I was still blown away by seeing that angel, but I was also like, "What else is going on?" And I tiptoed to my dad's room, and I opened the door just ever so slightly, and he is twisting and turning like crazy, and I immediately run downstairs, and I told my mom, who at first she didn't even believe me. In fact, it took several times to finally convince her that, hey, what I was saying was the truth. And she went upstairs. And as soon as she did, I could hear the door kind of creak open. And she yelled to call 911. And we later found out, this is the crazy thing, we later found out that my dad was actually having a seizure. He had broken his back, not just once, he broke his back in 6 different areas. And luckily, he's safe and healthy today. But the crazy thing is when the paramedics came, they said, you know, if you would have waited 20 more minutes even, he probably would have died, which is just crazy. But he's healthy today. And I still think back on that day in my testimony. I say, you know, that was kind of the first moment where I'm like, okay, maybe this whole Christian thing, even as a young kid, I was like, maybe this whole Christian thing is a lot bigger than I thought. I think just having that experience and still remembering it to this day, you know, for me personally, the fact that God gave me this gift to see something like that at such a young age just really reminds me to this day that he's still here. He's still present. And he's still doing miracles.
And suddenly there appeared with the angel a great multitude of the heavenly host, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace to men on whom his favor rests."
So we've been gathering stories about angels. We do this every Christmas, collect stories about angel encounters. And I once heard you tell a story about a red-headed angel. Would you please share that story?
When I turned 50, or when I was about to turn 50 years old, I kept saying to my friend group, I don't want to be in the country when I turn 50. I want to be in another country when I turn 50. And one of my friends, Diana, said to me one day, "Okay." And I knew when she said it, we are leaving the country. So a friend in Kansas City and a bunch of my friends where I live in Denver, we formed a plan to go to St. Kitts, an island in the Indies. We decided to go there. And so game on, we're going to St. Kitts. And in Denver that morning, we got there early for our flight. My friend Sarah and I were flying together, and there was ice on the plane. And so they had to de-ice the plane, and it took like 30 minutes. So we left late. We landed late in Dallas. And because of that, we missed our connecting flight to Miami. And so everyone was meeting in Miami, all these different flights converging on this meetup point in Miami, and then we're going to St. Kitts. So the whole morning, I felt like I was up early, rushing, catch the flight. Oh no, it's delayed. Run, try to catch the flight. Oh no, we missed the flight. And so it's just this constant striving all morning long. And I'm trying so hard to catch that flight. So I'm going from gate to gate and just like running around the airport, dragging my friend Sarah. And at one point, I'm standing in line to talk to someone to see if I can be standby. And there's like 7 or 8 people in front of me. And I'm thinking, I'm not going to get on this flight. And I become discouraged. And I kind of think in that moment, I like wake up spiritually and I say to God, "Father, I haven't even prayed today. I've just been running. I need your help. God, I need your help. I don't know how to get to Miami, Lord. Please help me. And I'm sorry I haven't prayed until now. I need you." So I'm just standing there waiting for 8 people to talk to the lady at the desk at American Airlines. And I look behind me, and this woman is standing behind me. And I'm about 5'10". And so she looked to be about 5'5". A petite, long, red, curly hair, just pale skin, pretty woman. And she's just standing behind me. So I glance at her and I smile. And then she says to me, "You're trying to get on a flight to Miami?" I'm like, "Yes, I'm trying to get on standby." She goes, "Oh, well, I'm just standing in line because I work for the airlines. And I just thought maybe I would try to get on this flight, but I've got a flight later." And then she looks me in the eye and she says, "You know what I would do if I were you? I would go down to gate 37. Because at gate 37, there's an American Airlines customer service desk, and I think they could probably help you there." And I looked at her and I went, "Okay, that sounds good. Gate 37, huh?" And this is how I remember what happened next. I turned back towards the line that I was in thinking, should I do that? Should I just leave this line and go all the way to gate 37, or should I wait? And I think I'm going to go. And I turned to tell her, and she's just gone. At the time, I thought, oh, she must have changed her mind or she must have gone to the bathroom. I didn't know. I didn't really think about it. And so I grab my friend Sarah and we are just hustling to get to gate 37. So I walk up to the customer service desk and I say, my friend and I are trying to get to Miami. We missed our flight. Is there any flights? And she said, yes, the one right here at this gate, 37. It's heading to Miami. I've got two standby seats that are available. You'll have to sit in the middle. I said, I'll sit on the wing. And as we're getting on the flight, the whole thing just like clarity. Who was that redheaded woman? Where did she go? Why did she talk to me? Why did she tell me to go to gate 37? I have chills right now while I'm telling you the story. My father wanted me to go to my birthday party in St. Kitts, and he knew it really mattered to me to not miss meeting up with my friends. And I think that was an angel God sent, a redheaded, curly-haired, beautiful angel who just said, if I were you, I'd go to gate 37.
Matthew 18:10. See that you do not despise one of these little ones, for I tell you that their angels in heaven always see the face of my Father in heaven.
Well, I have twin boys, and at the time, they were probably around 7 years old. My one son has major medical problems and special needs, and this is actually a story about my other son, Andrew. And we were in Wisconsin at the time. I grew up in Wisconsin, and my parents had purchased a place that was up near the ski hills of like Upper Michigan area and some in Wisconsin. And so we were up at what we called the ski shack as kids. We went up there skiing all the time. And so we took our kids up, and we were taking, I was taking Andrew skiing. He was just starting to learn how to ski, and my son Daniel was home with my husband because he wasn't able to ski. And so my dad had kind of taught me to teach my son Andrew with this ski harness, and it went around his waist, and you would kind of like a big long rope, and then you would kind of hold onto it and have them ski in front of you, and it was a way to kind of guide them. So we had gone down the hill and he had done really well, and we were getting onto the ski lift. And, you know, you always see the signs at the ski lift to make sure anything that's like scarves and things are like tucked in so they don't get caught. And I've been skiing my whole life, so I knew that. So I had the rope. It was still around his waist, but I had the whole thing bundled up on my lap so that when we got off the ski lift, I'd be able to help guide him again. And we get to the top of the ski lift, and it happened so fast, I don't even know how it happened, but we were getting off, and suddenly he was being dragged around by the chair, and it didn't, and there's supposed to be a ski hill operator at the top, but there was not, and there's also supposed to be a bar that makes the ski lift stop if someone falls, and it didn't, so several things went wrong, and all of a sudden he was being pulled, and he was going down the hill, you know, caught up in this web of this rope hanging from the chairlift. So I just panic. I'm screaming. I go down and he's literally above me hanging from the ski lift. So it's still kind of around his waist and I'm skiing as fast as I can. It's just going because no one is stopping the lift. People are trying to yell. I think I'm yelling, trying to get people to stop the lift. At certain points of the ski, I mean, I'm flying down the hill and he's above me at least, I don't even know, 20, 30 feet in the air at times. And it was about halfway down the hill when all of a sudden the ski lift stopped. So they must have gotten word down to the ski lift operator at the bottom of the hill. And this is just completely, I believe, a God thing that when the ski lift stopped, it was at the lowest point. I still couldn't reach him. He was still above my head. So I'm standing there. I have my hand up in the air, you know, reaching as far as I can. And he's still probably a good, I don't know, 15 feet above my hands. Like I can't reach him. And he was just hanging there and so sweet.
Was he scared?
You know, he didn't say much to me. I was so focused on just trying to help him. I don't even know if I said anything to him, but he was just later after hearing him tell the story, he remembers just being at peace and not scared at all. And so but in the moment it was frightening. He did say one thing to me. He did say, Mommy, it's starting to hurt my neck. And it had been around his waist and then it was creeping up under his armpits and then kind of getting close to his neck. So my mama brain is just like, he's going to be hanging by his neck. And I mean, I was just freaking out. And I would love to say that in those moments I was praying, but I wasn't. I was just panicked. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, this all happened so fast, out of the blue, these two boys came skiing down the hill on their snowboards, and they popped off their boots. And I just remember it happened so fast. It was like a dream. And one boy got on the other boy's shoulders and they reached up. And I just remember saying, take off his skis, because I thought if he fell, the skis could hurt him or us. And so they popped off his skis, and then they needed to unbuckle this harness around his waist, and they unbuckled the harness and he fell. And to this day, I don't quite remember. I feel like I caught him and I was hugging him, and all of a sudden I opened my eyes and they're gone. I mean, I was going to thank them. I was going to say, thank you so much for helping. And the minute I opened my eyes, they were gone. And I mean, I couldn't see them anywhere. And I was just holding him, and pretty soon a ski patrol came on his sled and, you know, just checked to see if we were okay, put us on his, you know, sled, brought us in, and got us hot chocolate and things like that. And I just remember thinking that was so surreal. How would those two boys have even known what to do? It happened so fast. They didn't even have time to really consult each other to see what we should do. And later I was talking, you know, Andrew was little, he was probably 7 or 8. And I just remember talking to him about it. And when he was young, he liked this little cartoon show called Napoleon. And there's a part where it's about a little golden retriever puppy who gets caught in a hot air balloon or something. And he's floating in the air, and there's a song that's playing, or he's singing to himself when he's up in the air. And Andrew's like, I just remember singing the Napoleon song. And he was said that he felt peaceful and comforted, and he wasn't scared at all. And so recently, I was listening to The Unfolding and one of the Angels episodes, and I think it's the first one where one of the men talked about, he was telling a story, and he talked about this angel being so tall. I think it happened in an ER or something like that. And when he was walking out of the room from the hospital or something, he had to duck to go under this door because he was so tall. And I remember thinking to myself, this was the summer, I was sitting out on my deck and I was looking up at a tree and thinking to myself, I wonder exactly where that chairlift was. Like, I wonder how tall that really was. And so I get out a measuring tape and I measured like up to where about I thought the bottom of skis would have been. And then I kind of quickly did the math of like one boy being on top of another boy, like kind of figuring out, even if they were tall, like let's say he was 6 foot, like how much would this be? And I measured it and I just thought there's no way they could have reached him. There's no possibility they could have reached him. And it just kind of hit me like, I'm pretty sure that was angels. And in the moment I thought it was, but it wasn't until I kind of thought it through. And I even talked to my son now, who's 25, about it. And he's like, yeah, Mom, I think it was angels too. So I definitely believe that the Lord is in our lives, and he loves us so much, and he'll even send angels to help us if need be. So yeah, it definitely strengthens my faith.
One of the things I love about these stories is that every person says their experience has made their faith stronger, maybe even given them a boldness that they didn't have before. Thanks to Cindy, Jennifer, Tony, Lisa, and Renee for being bold and sharing their stories. There's one more angel story in Scripture I wanted to mention. After Jesus' resurrection, he spent 40 days appearing to the disciples and others. And then this is recorded in Acts chapter 1. Jesus tells them that they'll receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on them, and they'll be witnesses to the ends of the earth. And then after he says this, he's taken up before their very eyes until a cloud hides him from view. And they're looking intently up in the sky when he's going, and then suddenly, two men dressed in white stood beside them. Men of Galilee, they said, why do you stand here looking into the sky? This same Jesus, who's been taken from you into heaven, will come back in the same way you've seen him go. That story reminds us that we live between two Advents. We celebrate the coming of Jesus as the Christ child, but we also look forward to a second Advent when he comes again. The words of those angels in Acts chapter 1 serve as a great benediction as we wrap up the final episode of The Unfolding for 2021. They're a reminder there will be another coming of Jesus, a second advent. In Matthew 25, it says, "When the Son of Man comes in his glory, all the angels will be with him. He is coming." And boy, that's good news to a weary world. Thanks to all the folks who make the unfolding possible. Special thanks in this episode to Sammy, Isabella, and Annabelle for helping us by reading the scriptures. Thanks also to producer Jason Rackow and our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H-Squared Leadership Institute. If you're looking for a keynote speaker to motivate your audience in 2022, head over to his website to learn more, HabibHabib.com. The Unfolding is produced by Northwestern Media, a ministry of the University of Northwestern St. Paul. We're going to take next week off to enjoy Christmas and New Year's with our families. So Merry Christmas to you, Happy New Year, and we'll be back January 7th with another page of The Unfolding.